Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So, middle weekend of the French Open. It is Saturday. It is the end of the British Challenge in terms of singles, Catherine Whittaker, because Kyle Edmund is out. Another epic contest, but from what I understand, not exactly a classic. He's gone out to Fabio Fognini in five sets.
No, a really, really odd match, David. In the words of Simon Briggs of The Telegraph, he said, on paper, great match, Fognini Edmund, but in reality, if I weren't being paid to sit here and watch it, this is not where I would be. And I think, really, that summed up the thoughts of very many in the stadium. That's not to say there weren't moments when the crowd really got into it, but the stadium was never full. Neither player, the two players were never playing their best at any one time. Of course, there were moments of absolute brilliance for Fognini and enough to get him over the line. But in all honesty, I was disappointed in Kyle Edmund today, and I think he is disappointed in himself because I was wrong. I thought his maturity, his intensity and his stickability would weather the Fognini storms, and it didn't. It didn't today, and that's a real shame for him because it was a big opportunity here, and Fognini didn't play his very best match, as I say. There were patches of brilliance, but he didn't play his best match. He had his foot taped so sturdily in, I think, the third set, David. It looked like he was practically wearing a cast on his foot. It was several layers of thick tape. I don't know how he managed to get any flexion in his ankle whatsoever. I mean, that must be one of the best tape jobs that a physio has ever done in the history of sport, really. I mean, because he didn't seem to be impeded in his movement at all. Kyle Edmund also had some treatment on what looked like a hip injury at the time. He lay down on the court and received quite a lot of treatment. That was towards the end of the second set. He actually ended up going on to win that set, bizarrely, just one of many bizarre twists and turns in the match. He said afterwards that the injury wasn't a big deal, that the treatment helped sufficiently and he wasn't impeded for the rest of the match. He did, because he called the trainer prior to Fognini's service game, and he did go on to break
and,
it
and also
and
he'd just lost three or four games in a row.
And at the time I thought there's sort of an unwritten rule that it's unsportsmanlike to call the trainer when your opponent is about to serve, and at the time I thought, well, you make allowances for I thought, you know, Carl's a sportsmanlike guy. The fact that he's called the trainer probably indicates that it's an urgent need. But then the fact that he went on to win the set and move, I thought, pretty well, pretty unimpeded throughout the rest of the match, perhaps indicates that it wasn't quite such an urgent need. Or, on the other hand, that it was more absolutely miraculous work from the physio team here at the French Open,
the
quite possibly.
Greatest physios ever.
But yeah, all the classic things. I don't want to take anything away from Fognini because you can't help but get into his matches. And when he's on, it's a sight for sore eyes. I realised I'd never really sat right up close and watched Fabio Fognini. We watched at Wimbledon last year, and that was quite something when we sort of caught the last couple of sets of his match against Andy Murray. But the ease with which he produces power for me is you know, that there's a lot about Fabio Fognini I don't like, which I probably don't need to go into, but the ease of his power is just formidable, absolutely formidable.
Slingshot power, isn't it? It just sort of pings off his racket without the bludgeoning effect that you see from Edmund. It's a different kind of power, isn't it? But I mean, I know what you mean. It is just flashing blade stuff. But at the same time, it feels to me like the match was nothing like anybody expected in any way, because you mentioned what Simon tweeted midway through that match. And at the start of it, most of the journalists courtside, and yourself and I talking last night, and Charlie and I the night before, we were really raving about this match, about the potential. It's gone five sets, and it just doesn't feel like it was a spectacle at all. I mean, everybody seemed to really just be having to endure it, and it sounds like the players did as well. I mean, towards the end as well, I mean, it befuddled me, because I said to you when we were texting about it that I felt as though Kyle Edmund's sort of meat and potatoes basic game, just keep on coming, would probably get the job done there, and I was wrong. So, you know, credit to Fognini.
Yeah, and I thought the same, you know, when we discussed the match in preview yesterday. I thought, you know, over best of five, exactly the intensity, the relentlessness, the style of play of Kyle Edmund and his physical strength would give him the edge in the longer match. But I really got that wrong, and you've let me down.
God, what's
Kyle.
He doing? Goodness
me. And I'll tell you who else he's let down. The length of the ordeal that was that match means that the whole schedule on Suzanne Longlen court, they've had a nightmare throughout the 7 days of the tournament so far with scheduling not exactly going to plan. The whole schedule is out of whack. Of course, the resumption of Monfils and Goffin, of course, David, that ended up going to five sets. And now they're only just at the start, as we record here, of Irina Camelia Begu and Caroline Garcia. And then there's still scheduled to be Serena Williams and Yulia Gerges and Isner against Pierre Hugerbert to come. I mean, there is absolutely no way Isner and Herbert are taking to Suzanne Longlen court today. Whether they'll move that match or just carry it over, I don't know. But the ordeal that was the five sets of Fognini and Edmund has ruined things for everyone today except Fabio Fognini.
Yes. Well, we'll get on to the rest of the women's draw in a moment, because Maria Sharapova had a fantastic win today. But just sticking with the men for now, you know, totally different in terms of ordeal length was Rafael Nadal against Richard Gasquet. But it remains an ordeal for Gasquet, doesn't it? Because, I mean, what is it, 16-0 the head-to-head now? And, I mean, he barely got games today against Nadal. It was almost unfair to put him through it, it seemed, at times.
It's a depressing match to watch, in all honesty. Watching somebody of Gasquet's calibre walk onto court against anybody, knowing that you know he's not even been able to convince himself one iota that he can win that match. There's something quite bleak about that. There was an immensely amusing tweet yesterday from Hannah Wilkes, who is pretty much consistently entertaining on Twitter, but she said, "You can keep your best of three versus best of five debate. I'm going to be over here starting a petition to make Nadal versus Gasquet best of zero. Explain to me the point of even playing that match." And look, I know that sounds harsh, but if Gasquet believed, then maybe we would all believe a bit more. The problem is that Gasquet doesn't believe, does he? I mean, I think it's been 10 years, David, since he's won a set from Nadal. I mean, it's just horrible. It's absolutely horrible to watch. And I know they couldn't really downgrade the scheduling of that match, because Nadal has already played once on Longlen, and I think you know, that's seen as everyone, Rafa included, as his one and only trip out there for the tournament. But I mean, and on paper, you know, Nadal against Gasquet, great. You know, top seed, 10-time champion against a high-ranked Frenchman, brilliant. But no, I mean, they should have hidden it away on court 16 or something. It was all a shame.
Catherine, are you saying they should have stuck world number one Rafael Nadal on court 18 like they put world number one Simona Halep on court 18?
If I was choosing which match involving a world number one to put on court 18 today, David, I wouldn't have gone for Simona Halep against Andrea Petkovic, put it that way.
Which is still going on and has produced a 7-5 first set to Halep. So it's obviously been a good competitive contest so far. Look, I mean, nobody here is saying we should be putting Nadal on court 18.
Absolutely not.
And yes, he certainly has won lots and lots of Grand Slams, which Simona Halep hasn't. But I asked early on today, could anybody remember any male world number one in history that has been stuck on court 18, a reigning world number one? And, I mean, this went on for some time. Nobody seemed to be able to come up with it. Lots of people.
Yeah, you had a lot of replies, David. Well, a lot of people with a lot to say, but nobody with an actual answer to your question.
Yeah, the closest anybody actually got, and I do remember this one, was 1993, Pete Sampras, when he'd just taken over as world number one at Wimbledon. He was put on, I think, court 14 on the last 16 day, on the Monday, against Andrew Foster of Britain, and he did not like it at all. He got really angry about that court scheduling. I remember at the time. But
I remember Yelena Yankovic when she was a world number one. She was put out on court 18 at Wimbledon, and she was very, very unhappy about that at the time. Obviously, she wasn't a Grand Slam champion, never ended up being a Grand Slam champion. But that was the one that sprung to my mind. But I don't believe it. I don't think it would happen to a men's world number one. But, you know, there'll be plenty of people that say, you've got no proof for that. There's, you know, anyway.
Anyway,
another day, David.
It looks like, well, Halep has won the first set. That much we do know. What else has happened in the men's draw today? Because Marin Cilic was winning last time I saw. Kevin Anderson got a win today as well. I saw Borna Coric going down.
Yeah, the big servers are quietly making their way through the draw, David. Kevin Anderson through to the round of 16. He beat Misha Zverev in four sets. Marin Cilic beat Steve Johnson. They've just been quietly rumbling along.
I think it's
Nobody's
two sets to love,
anything.
Isn't it? I think they're still going on. But Goffin, I'm really impressed with Goffin fighting back to win against
the Steve Johnson match. I think Cilic has won, hasn't he?
Has he?
No?
Okay. Well, Goffin, two sets to one down, I think he was against Monfils, didn't he? Come back and
he was match points down, David. He was match points down.
Wow.
And that match set the site here at Roland Garros alight more than any other I've seen this week. Not just the stadium, but the corridors of Roland Garros filled with people staring at the big screen throughout really most of the fourth and fifth sets of that. It was a bit of a nightmare for us, actually, because there is not a whole lot of spare space in the outdoor areas here at Roland Garros. So when they fill up with hordes of crowds, you pretty much cannot move an inch. So it's a bit of a claustrophobic situation. But, the roars and everything were incredible. It was spine-tingling stuff, less so for the French crowd when Monfils ended up losing it. But little David Goffin, David, isn't he great?
They've had a rubbish day today, the French, haven't they? I mean, because they lost Luca Puy to Karen Khachanov as well. We've just been talking about Gasquet's defeat, and now they've lost Monfils. But, I mean, I love David Goffin. I just love watching him. I love the way he refuses to play along with the local fervour and desire for the home favourite. He stands up for himself. He's not a big guy, but he stands up for himself and he takes it to the opponent. And he's just such a joy to watch. He's not flashy, but he's just a brilliant tennis player.
I agree. I love him. Probably one of the best, if not the best, backhand down the line in the business. I think yesterday I probably would have said the best, but having having watched Fabio Fognini in the flesh today, I'm just hesitating on that. But it is certainly one of the best.
Nishikori as well.
Yeah. Look, there are others, but Goffin's is right up there. Absolutely right up there.
It is, yeah.
I just love the way he goes about his business. I love the way he's basically quite a serious guy, but then every now and then he has this sort of wry, knowing smile. I don't know, I just think he's great, especially when you think about what happened to him here last year, where he left the place in a wheelchair pretty much. I mean, that was only last year that he
and that was falling over the tarpaulin,
falling over the
wasn't
tarpaulin
it?
At the back of the court. An incident that I never ever wish to see a replay of again, because it looked absolutely hideous, and yet somehow he actually came back pretty quickly, didn't he? But I need to apologise, David, because Steve Johnson is hanging in there. I handed him his L card a little bit too soon. He is 4-all in the third, two sets to lockdown.
You got him on the plane home.
Yeah, sorry, Steve. Incident that reminds me of a quote Richard Evans tweeted out today. Richard Evans, a very well-respected, long-standing tennis journalist. He had a chance to chat to Andre Agassi today, who I think is in town with Steffi Graf, doing some bits and bobs of sponsor stuff here in Paris. Richard Evans asked him what he would do if he were playing Rafael Nadal here in Paris this year, and he said, phone up Air France and book myself a flight home.
Well, I tell you, it's a good line, but I tell you... A peak Andre Agassi, it would be fascinating. It really would. Tell us what you think at Tennis Podcast. Peak Andre Agassi against Rafael Nadal on clay. Could he do it? Could he take out Nadal in one day? That's what I want to know. It's one of those impossible to answer questions that Catherine enjoys so much.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can tell you the answer, David, and that's that we will never, ever know, and it's pointless.
I do remember when they played each other, you know, towards the end of Agassi's career, and he said he'd decided that his strategy was to belt the backhand cross-court as fast as he could into the Nadal forehand, assuming that would make Nadal late on the shot and put up a sort of short forehand for him to put away. And he said, lo and behold, it did work. The problem was, there was so much weird spin on the ball that when it bounced, I didn't know where to put my feet to hit my backup shots.
Well, Mats Wilander in commentary on Eurosport today was actually getting pretty annoyed, not just with Richard Gasquet. He was, you know, the example in front of him, but he was just annoyed with opponents of Nadal in general, that they don't try anything, that they just seem to rock up on court and think, well, I'll just play my game and hope I'll have a good day, when we all seem to know that nobody's good day is going to be good enough against Rafael Nadal unless he's having a bad day. And just hoping that he has a bad day at Roland Garros is not good enough, really. I think, you know, he wants to see something like that, some really concerted tactics, you know, a bit like that Australian Open match when Gilles Simon came out just softballing, slowballing Novak Djokovic that year, and took it to five, and just, it was really sort of an arresting sight seeing somebody do that and just completely commit to what looks like a very bizarre
tactic,
you know, and comes back to the drop shot and the you know, the drop shot return and all of that. Like, try something, because going forehand to forehand with Rafael Nadal, not good enough.
Bellelli kind of did it first round, didn't he? He sort of decided, well, I'm just going to tee off and I'm not even going to worry about it. If I miss, so be it, you know. And it got him close, actually, in that third set. But I do feel that Nadal is playing at a different level right now to what he was playing even in that first round. So, good luck, everybody.
34 sets in a row he's won here, David. 34.
Wow.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Talking to people who are playing at a different level, Maria Sharapova today, was it 6-2, 6-1 over Karolina Pliskova?
Yeah.
I mean, you tell me, and I think that overlapped with the Edmund match, so how much of it you saw, you tell me. But, I mean, that is not a scoreline I expected. Is that Sharapova playing to the peak of her powers? Is that Pliskova not showing up? Is it a bit of both?
I only saw points here and there, but every time I looked up, I was seeing Maria Sharapova thrash a winner from either wing. At one point, I saw her hit a forehand winner with her left hand. You know how she does that thing where she is stretched out wide on the backhand side and she transfers the racket into her other hand? You know that Maria Sharapova is really cooking, and that's what was happening today. She just got the first strike in every time. It was so positive from Sharapova. It was that laser-like intensity, the sort of look in your eye that you just wouldn't want to lock eyes with her because you'd feel terrified. But I am struggling to contain, with apologies to Yulia Gerges, David, I'm struggling to contain my desire for Sharapova Serena to happen in the next round. I can't keep a lid on it. I will exclaim or implode or something if Yulia Gerges ruins the party. And I really like you, Yulia Gerges. I really do. And she's playing great. And she probably deserves to make the second week here. But just go away. Just go away and don't ruin our fun.
But I mean, we should say as well, there's going to be a lot of you listening to us and saying, well, what are you asking this for? We know Serena Williams has won, or we know Yulia Gerges has won. Well, unfortunately, we can't wait until that match finishes to record today, just logistically. What we can do, though, Catherine, is one of those sort of...
Might not even finish today, David, frankly.
Yes.
So.
Well, one of those either-or questions that you and I sometimes have to ask tennis players, when we don't know the identity of the next opponent yet, as to what's going to...
He's on the other end of the phone. That's Alex Goretzka jogging past me. Oh. Says to say hello to David.
Hello, Alex. Nice to see you.
I mean, he literally is jogging past me.
Oh, dear.
I don't know whether he's out for a run or...
So anyway. one of these either-or questions. I mean, I felt the moment I saw that Sharapova result, it just occurred to me, you know, what is it now? It's about 14 years since Sharapova beat Williams. And...
It's 13 and a half, yeah. Isn't it? I think it was October 2004.
It's a long time, isn't it? And I mean, I can't even remember what the head-to-head is. I mean, it must be about 15 or something like that matches. I can't remember the number exactly.
I think more than that, yeah.
It's an incredible number. It's all Serena Williams, and she seems to play out of her skin, even better than her normal self when she's got Sharapova on the other side of the net. It just feels to me that... Sharapova's really coming into form. Serena Williams is obviously short of full match fitness and short of timing, I would imagine, to some degree as well. You're never going to get a better time for Serena Williams to beat Sharapova if she has got there, indeed, when you're listening to this. That's what I thought, anyway, when I first saw it. What did you think?
I agree, yeah. All of the circumstances level the playing field for me. If she can't do it tomorrow, she might as well pack up and go home and take a Richard Gasquet approach to things because, yeah, this is, yeah, she's had the playing field completely leveled for her, if not tipped in her favour. However, I think Serena's desire not to lose to Sharapova, should that match happen, will be so great that it will just bring out some sort of weird, wild animal in her. I really do. It is going to be, if it happens, the most perfect barometer imaginable of where Serena Williams is at, because we know she will produce the very best that she is able to produce at the moment in the current stage of her comeback for that match. So, yeah, that will be the marker of where she's at. And I don't know the answer to where she's at.
No.
She might not be at a place where she can beat Yulia Gerges, and all of this section of the podcast will have
to
hit the cutting room floor. Yeah. But
I mean, the good thing is, I think that match is next going to be on Monday, isn't it? So we've got tomorrow to preview it once we know it properly. But that's...
Do you know another bit of the podcast that can hit the cutting room floor, David? The bit where I corrected myself and apologised to you and to Steve Johnson because he has just lost to Marin Cilic in straight sets.
Okay, all right. Well, this is a kind of live podcast, people. I hope you're enjoying it. Things are happening as we speak. We don't know everything, as you can tell. We don't even know opponents of people yet, but we're giving it to you as we get it. What else has happened today in the women's draw that has struck you? I mean, I'll tell you one thing that really... I noticed early on today was that win for Annette Kontaveit over Petra Kvitova. Now, I think that the headline there is Petra Kvitova, somebody who'd won all those matches in a row, who we were all talking about as a potential finalist in this tournament or better, is out. That's the headline. But I saw Kontaveit a couple of weeks ago and I was so impressed. I mean, I think she's a really interesting person. She's so watchable in terms of her personality. She's really bubbly and forceful and up for it and happy out there. She looks like she's just born to compete. Very, very good player. I saw a bit Caroline Wozniacki in Rome a few weeks ago. She also speaks in a very British English accent because she spent a lot of time in Britain training there. So it's quite comical to listen to her interviewed. But there she is. I think it's Estonia she's from, isn't it? And there she is.
She's
gone and beaten Petra Kvitova. I mean, a heck of a result.
Yeah, in straight sets, no less. Two tiebreak sets, 8-6 in the first tiebreak, 7-4 in the second. So, yeah, she's obviously playing the big points well. You know, that's a shootout, Kontaveit and Kvitova. I didn't see much of it. I saw Kvitova in press afterwards, and she was very philosophical about it. I mean, that's part of her sort of new approach to tennis post-trauma, I think. But... yeah, she certainly was, you know, disappointed to lose, but was able to have a good deal of perspective on it. There was plenty of smiling in the press conference and all of that. And I think she knows she lost to somebody that's kind of capable of beating anybody in Annette Kontaveit. I'm just trying to look up the draw to see who she plays next.
I think
next.
It's Sloane Stephens.
It is Sloane Stephens, who, speaking of people that are playing the big points well, won through 8-6 in the third against Camilla Giorgi today.
Yeah, after losing, I think, the first set really quite heavily as well, or losing the first set, and then I think Sloane Stephens turned it around and won the second set heavily, and then it was, as you say, 8-6 in the third. And I mean, we've said here on the podcast that few people have picked Sloane Stephens to win this title, yet I could see Kontaveit beating her if she... It depends which version of those two players gets out on the court. Certainly with Stephens, I think Kontaveit will give her best of herself regardless, because she's a pretty reliable player.
I think that's a good point. She is somebody that always gives the best of herself. Reliable. I like it. Elise Mertens, speaking of which, she's through to the fourth round, where she'll play Simona Halep, who's just won through against Andrea Petkovic. I think that might have been a retirement, actually, looking at how quickly that's ended. I know Petkovic was having treatment out there on court.
She's been
18.
Having long matches as well, I think.
It wasn't a retirement. It was a 6-love second set. That is a shame.
Oh, right.
Big shame.
Well, Simona Halep, my pick for the title, still going. But I tell you what, a lot of people's pick for the title now, we've mentioned Sloane Stephens, a lot of people are talking about Garbiñe Muguruza suddenly.
And they are now.
Yeah.
But they weren't necessarily before the tournament.
No.
Does seem like something's happened to Garbiñe Muguruza. It's happening, isn't it? Love and two against Sam Stosur, a former finalist here. Love and two. absolutely bruising from Muguruza. I mean, I still think she can go off the boil as quickly as she's come onto it. But yeah.
Well, she could end up playing the winner of that Serena Williams Gerges Sharapova section.
Yeah, I mean, her next opponent, Lucia Cerenko, with all the respect in the world, Muguruza, the heavy, heavy favourites come through that. And then, yeah, it's the winner of the Sharapova / Gerges / Williams match, which, again, I desperately want to see. I want to see, sorry, Cerenko and Gerges, but I want to see Muguruza against Serena / Sharapova.
There are so many good matches to look forward to. Catherine, anything else you want to talk about that you've enjoyed today, that you've seen today, anybody you've spoken to before we sign off for another one?
No, well, the two people I spoke to today were all related to Kyle Edmund, who is no longer a relevant force in this year's French Open.
Are people pretty disillusioned from a British press standpoint with that performance? Are they surprised? The disillusioned?
Is he surprised? There was head scratching, certainly. Obviously, disappointment. You know, you see the faces of the freelance journalists in particular, seeing their income for the next week, you know, tumble away before their very eyes. They rely on being given space, column inches in papers, and for a lot of papers, if there's no,
how could you do it,
no Brits, there's no Brits around. Yeah, sorry, you have literally destroyed the livelihood of a number of very well respected journalists. And how appalling.
What's the Yorkshire journalist going to do now? Oh, he's going to just have to camp out in every Zverev conference.
Oh, he is not Brit. He doesn't care what nationality you are representing, David. He will go to any press conference and he will make it more entertaining than it otherwise would be.
Brilliant, brilliant. Catherine,
that much is guaranteed.
Great stuff. Well, still a bit more tennis to enjoy today. Then it's cheese board time. Obviously, we have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We are daily every single night of the French Open, of course, and all the Grand Slams and Queens as well, the Fevertree Championships in a couple of weeks' time. We are brought to you also in association with our executive producers, Melanie Bowes, SSS, tennisballs.com, our mascot, Charlie the Ferret. We're having some fantastic tennis castaways applications being sent in on social media. Pictures of yourself.
Tennis podcastaways.
They're going so well. They're going so well.
Got to get the hashtag right, David.
Oh, right. Hashtag tennis podcastaways. How could I not get that right? But anyway, that's what you need. Show us your passion for the show by wearing your T-shirt, watching tennis, having a cocktail on a beach, whatever it might be. Just show the Tennis Podcast, or on your phone, whatever it might be. Leave us a review as well on iTunes. Tell everybody you know about the show. Get everybody listening that you know, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.